I found the original proposal by the Media Commission quite naive, if I'm being really honest. No government is ever going to get rid of, a tax like this because, how are they going to find whatever it is, 40, 50, 60, maybe 100 million a year, depending on how much they want to fund media for? If we couldn't get water charges over the line, and we never will, I don't think. The television licence fee, for all its flaws, has been there for a long time. People understand it. It's out of date, of course it is. It needs reform, absolutely. But abolishing it and replacing it with public with some sort of general taxation funding, I think, was quite a naive move on behalf of the commission. And they misunderstood really the politics of how government works. The government were never going to accept that. So I think in recommending it, they failed then, I think, to really grasp the nettle and make a recommendation that the government might have accepted, which is, whole scale, really generational reform of what the television licence fee is. And this is what I would have done. Rather than thinking about it, putting a licence or a tax on a box in the corner that very many households don't have anymore. People watch content on their phones. They watch them on laptops or iPads, and there's this whole scale of television license evasion. Anyway, it's actually very difficult now to apartment blocks. How do you know where people are and so on? And even if people have a television in the corner, they may not be watching it live TV. So what I would have done was I would have moved away from the idea of taxing the box in the corner towards. And there's a couple of things you could have done here. I think digital advertising is certainly one where there's about €1 billion a year in digital advertising spent in Ireland. And the vast majority of that is hoovered up by the big tech companies. Putting in tax on digital advertising would have been a start, I think, at redressing the balance there where the tech players are being forced really to the table to pay for the monopoly position that they are now in, which is damaging a lot of smaller media. The second thing I think they could have done was, and there's a model here from the US back in the 70s and 80s when cable TV companies literally plowed up the streets of Manhattan and the Bronx and Queens to lay cables. One of the things that they had to do was they had to agree that part of the subscription, if you wanted your cable, in your apartment, part of the subscription you pay every month would go to funding local journalism or funding local broadcast media, PBS, if you like, public broadcasting services. I think there's in a digital world, there was room for a media commission report to be innovative here and say, should we look at some sort of Netflix tax? Should 1 euro of your 8, 9, 10 euros a month be set aside? Should the companies be forced to do that to fund, a media commission, a fund to be used for Irish content, or indeed for themselves to have to pay that out to pay local production companies to make content that must be shown on these services? Because I think that would have been a much more innovative and clever way of saying, yes, we need a different funding model. The television license fee isn't this, but funding on general taxation was just never going to happen in a time when there are so many pressures on the public purse. Equally, I would say that, if you look at the UK as probably the worst example here, the BBC now is under significant pressure simply because it is funded through general exchequer funding. I think we would have been setting up RTE and plenty of other media organizations in the country for failure if we had gone down that road. So I actually welcome the fact the government have rejected it. The difficulty now is, what are they going to do? And we don't know. That's the real problem here. This is a really great report. There's lots of great things in it. I welcome loads of it. But the big elephant in the room is, how are we going to pay for the kind of public service journalism, the kind of Irish language media support, the kind of support for independent drama and independent broadcasting that we want in this country. And without that kind of financial model to support it, this report is really a dead letter.
There is reference to an audiovisual content levy in the section about Irish language, culture and sport, referring to the Audiovisual Media Services Directive as part of the government response. But is that part of the answer? Does this address some of your concerns, this reference?
Well, we don't have the detail. I think that's the difficulty. We don't know what that levy is, how it's going to be levied. Is that simply a levy on, existing broadcasters? Let's take a local radio station must spend 10% of its budget on Irish language media. Is that what they're saying there? We don't know yet. So if that's all it is, then really that's not going to help anybody. It's going to make things more difficult, I think, for local media to survive and to pay for quality content. And the 10% that is going to be put into Irish language media, of course, is welcome. But it's borrowing Peter to pay Paul. You're not really adding any new money into the system, and the system is already at breaking point in terms of, local journalism, local radio stations, local newspapers really don't have any money to begin with.
On that point, there is a significant section in the report about support for public service content, a broader media sector, including a revised media fund with provision for reporting on local authorities, courts, local news and so on. How far does that go in addressing concerns about the real pressures that are facing local media today?
Well, I think those recommendations are really welcome. And I think it's very easy to throw stones from the sidelines here and be the hurler in the ditch. But I actually do welcome those. We have a reasonably good model for how this could work if we look to the UK. And we had a report this week from the UK's Department for Media and Sport, looking at this and many other issues in the UK, where they've had a local democracy reporter fund now for quite a few years, funded through the television licence fee. So it's the BBC's television licence fee. Part of that is sectioned off, and local media are able to use that fund to apply to basically fund the salary of a local journalist to work in a local organisation on issues like court reporting, councils, public democracy, these kinds of important issues. That's going to be a big help. I'm not saying it's the panacea to all the difficulties of local media, but it'll certainly help. If you can pay for a journalist, pay their salary to do local journalism, that's certainly going to help a lot of struggling local media. We don't have the detail, of course, of how it's going to work exactly. We don't know how much money is going to be there. We don't know who's going to get it. We don't know how it's going to be distributed. You know, for example, in Mayo, there are three local newspapers, one in Castlebar, one in Westport, and one in Ballina, and a local radio station. And indeed, there are community stations as well. And whereas in Galway, there's, a much bigger county has, the Connacht Tribune Group. It has the Tuam Herald, but just based in Tuam, and it has Galway Advertiser. So who's going to decide who gets the money, who gets the funding? That's going to be an interesting question. I think there'll be plenty of debate around that. The other question is, maybe funding a local newspaper, and this is quite controversial, isn't the way to go. Maybe that should be, or what about room for innovation? What about a startup media organization that just focuses on investigative reporting? So we don't know yet enough detail to know how this is going to work. But I think in general, I think the direction of travel of this report is really super. And I do welcome it. One thing not directly related to local, but is sort of connected, it sits between Irish language, I think, and local, is we mustn't forget that, a significant minority now of people, more than 1 in 8 people living in Ireland, we're not born here. And I think we do need to recognise that there are plenty of supports needed as well in terms of integration, in terms of media for, Polish migrants who came here in the early 2000s. You see very little Polish media in Irish media. you know, occasionally you do. But there are plenty of Eastern European languages that aren't recognised really, I think, in Irish media. And I point here to Australia, maybe as an example of a country that's done this really well.
SBS.
Yeah. SBS, exactly. The Special Broadcasting Service. They have a Department of Multicultural Affairs as a senior cabinet minister, and they fund a broadcasting service that's multilingual. And while, of course, Irish is important, I would also say that it's important to recognise that there are other languages in this country that need to be recognised. We're not a monolingual country. We never have been. And so I would say that there's probably more nuance here needed in the delivery of this. I think the broad direction of travel is certainly very, very welcome, but we need the detail. And I think we need to think more laterally about how that's going to be applied.
Indeed. I mean, I've looked myself into multilingualism in Irish broadcasting, and the amount of content originating in Ireland is minimal in the extreme, although there are some interesting examples on community radio and so on. So it's clearly an area for development. But I do think that the report, though, is relatively strong on EDI issues, equality, diversity and integration. There's quite a few recommendations there in terms of ways of increasing that in the future media landscape.
Yeah, and I think that's very true. The representation of women is clearly signalled. One interesting one, John, I thought was the discussion around sport, and this is
and
something
sport I think, and integration in particular.
Sport and integration,
yes,
exactly. This is something I think that's going to be quite interesting going forward in terms of how we as a country think about funding sport. So you know. If you turn on any local radio station in the country on a Sunday, or indeed if you turn on RTE, by and large, sport is covered through one lens. It's team dominated. It's male journalists, by and large, reporting on male sports, by and large, and reporting by and large on kind of the three big ones: rugby at certain times of the year, soccer or football, and Gaelic games. This report really kind of, I think, points a lot of fingers in the direction of the sporting organisations themselves, but also at the media, in saying that's not good enough. And we know this from all kinds of areas in terms of the representation of women, the health outcomes of women, the fact that teenage girls stop playing sports, in their early teens, and very few of them keep it on. And media has such a critical role to play here as an influencer in terms of being putting role models in front of women. Now we are seeing small incremental changes. I'm thinking of kind of the Katie Taylor effect or the Kelly Harrington effect, but we're really only at the start of a journey there. We need to see an awful lot more female sports. We need to have different kinds of conversations about how sport is covered. We need to think of sport, I think, much more broadly in terms of the health benefits of sport, of participation and so on. It shouldn't just be about elite sports played by men, reported on by men, and almost gladiatorial style chambers in terms of what these Croke Parks and so on are kind of how they're covered and how they're represented. So I think that's a really interesting recommendation. There are others, of course. We spoke about just a few minutes ago about minority languages, about the need for more representation of the Irish language in particular, about the representation of other minorities in the country, indeed disability, social class, and socioeconomic issues as well. So I think there's plenty of good things in that space as well.
There's also some interesting recommendations around regulation and governance. I mean, the proposal to enshrine in law the fact that, public service media should be recognised as critical public infrastructure, a review of the statutory objectives of public service media and so on, and some of those key values around impartiality, around truthfulness in news and diversity, as we've said. So this will all require, of course, legislative amendments ultimately, won't it?
It will. And, I think we're also going to have a really significant conversation about what public service media is and who does it. Because, RTE is the public service broadcaster, like capital T for thee there. But it's not the only media organization in the country that does public service. Plenty of local broadcasters provide really invaluable public services in terms of local media and local journalism holding power to account that RT has never done and never will do. And so I think that you know, any legislative change is going to have to recognise that RT is not the only player in town anymore. The other issue, I think, it's not directly addressed in the report, but I think it's really crucial, is what do we want RTE to be? And I think the problem for RTE right now is RTE is all things to all people. It's bloated. And, you know, it's very easy to kick RTE. It's very easy for me to sit here and say, you know, RTE is bloated. You know, I'm conscious that I worked for independent news and media many years ago. And that organization and RTE have had differing views over the years. So I'm conscious of my own biases here in saying what I'm saying. But RTE cannot continue, I don't think, in the way that it is. It's losing, you know, tens of millions every year. It's a bloated organization. It's too big. It's trying to do too many things. And I think, you know, in being the monopoly player as well, it's actually holding back innovation and it's stifling growth in other sectors, in other media, because it's so big and because it has a monopoly position. That's not to say I think we should dismantle RTE. Of course, I'm not saying that. And I think it's a very important national institution. But I do think we need to think about a different kind of RTE. And the very first thing I would say is RTE is far too Dublin-centric. You know, it's based in Dublin. It thinks about Dublin when it covers things. Apart from, you know, a very few examples of kind of short-term drama, the big RTE soap is a Dublin soap. I mean, you know, you couldn't think of a more critical example of RTE supporting regional media than basing, a substantial investment, a long-term investment like a drama somewhere other than in Dublin. And yet they haven't done that. And I think that's, you know, really critical. It's more difficult with news. I accept news happens in Dublin. You need to have a base of news in Dublin. But it doesn't all need to be in Dublin. Very often local of the regions are sort of, you know, and finally kind of stories about, you know, lost sheep and this kind of thing. There really isn't any kind of investigative significant investment in news outside of Dublin. And it's too easy, I think, for RTE to do Dublin news, because it's based obviously in Donnybrook and all its reporters are there. So I think, you know, RTE needs to do an awful lot more to regionalise, and I would say it should start by moving a significant proportion of the operations outside of Dublin, investing more in the regions, and thinking about being a smaller organisation. It's far too big. RTE has to sort out its own mess. You know, I think it's up to the Director General and it's up to the RTE board to figure out what RTE should look like. But, you know, we've been saying this, not just me, lots of people have been saying this for years. 20 years ago, there were debates about whether or not 2FM should be something RTE would fund. You know, there's no public service reason why RTE has 2FM. You know, RTE does not do any better job of supporting Irish music than the myriad of local stations, or Today FM, or, you know, the online options that now exist. You know, I think that argument might have been there in 1979. It certainly isn't there in 2023. So, you know, should 2FM exist? I don't think it should. I think that's something RTE should just close down. You know, it really, you know, hasn't made any significant inroads into commercializing any kind of app or any kind of digital presence. You know, it's really fallen behind in the podcasting space. You know, it's still, I suppose, producing content with the idea that we all sit around the television at 6 o'clock and watch the news as a family, when that hasn't happened in 30 years. You know, people move on. I'm 45. I very rarely watch live television of any kind. Nobody younger than me does. So, you know, an RTE either hasn't recognized that or has failed to move in that direction. Now, I will say it is difficult. I mean, I accept the fact that you have to cater for the audience you have as well. The audience RTE has is probably an older audience. You know, it does a great job in public service news. I think RTE News, Primetime, these kinds of shows are really, really strong. But, you know, where it's not strong and where I think it's going to increasingly struggle is in drama and all the other myriad of things that it's doing and it's trying to doing. And it can't do everything. So I think it's going to have to be a slimmer organization and decide what are its core values, what's its core mission, and really, you know, do that really well. And accept that in some parts, in some areas, that's not the core mission for RTE. And that is something we can't afford anymore.